And we're here today with William Hogg, the representative for the Federal Party and the upcoming elections. And your riding is the Compton-Stanstead riding, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And that comprises what communities exactly?
Well, it starts up in the north with Whedon, then head out east to Scottsdown, La Patrie, Chartierville, then down to the border at East Hereford, cross through Quaticook, Dixville to Stanstead, then up the 143 to North Atliars Cliff, Lennoxville, and then Rockforest, St. Deauville, St. Catherine d'Atley.
So it includes Lennoxville, it includes a lot of rural territory as well.
Yep.
A lot of farming land in that region. Approximately what the population of that region is, do you know?
We're roughly 80,000 voters and about 105,000 people in total.
Okay. And of that, do you have an idea of how many are Anglophones?
Roughly 15% of the overall population.
So generally about two or three times the overall population, Anglophone population of the region in general.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So you're in politics.
Yep, of course.
What's the reason for that?
Well, I studied politics for almost a decade. I've been teaching it all over the province of Quebec for the last 10, 11 years. I love politics. I love studying politics. I love looking how politics works. I know how governments function. And I've been watching how things have been going on in the riding over the last 7 years since we've had a Bloc member in Parliament. Noticed that not much has gotten done and decided to say, hey, look, we need somebody who can do things in this riding. And so I made the jump.
Oh, so I'm pretty sure that a lot of people like myself are sitting here wondering, how could anyone be so interested in politics? But, you know, how is that?
Well, I can tell you from a personal perspective, it all started because of a girl.
It usually does. I didn't expect that. Go ahead.
Well, back when I was in high school, I did a linguistic exchange with a family in Switzerland and fell in love with the country, fell in love with the girls, and said, how do I get back to Europe as frequently as possible? And I thought, well, you know, being a diplomat might be fun. So when I was ending high school, I said, well, you know, maybe I'll get into international relations, start studying politics and stuff like that, and ended up falling in love with the whole idea of studying political science.
Imagine. Well, I didn't expect that answer.
Oh, it's a great story.
It is. Okay. So, you traded in one love for another.
Yeah. Well, I keep both.
All right. That's a good point. So this love of politics is one thing. What enticed you to run for the Liberal Party?
Well, after studying especially Canadian foreign policy during my work as a student, both at the undergrad and grad level, I learned to appreciate what Liberal governments had done for Canada's position in the world. You know, if you go back and you think about past prime ministers like Mackenzie King, who took us through World War II, kept the country together. You had Louis Saint-Laurent, who put Canada on the world map by keeping us engaged after World War II. Then you got Lester Pearson. Everybody seems to know Lester Pearson as being the guy who invented peacekeeping. He won a Nobel Peace Prize for it. And then you go through things, prime ministers like Jean Chrétien, who kept us out of Iraq. And that was, I think, for many Canadians, a defining moment in, you know, what a Liberal prime minister can do when we're faced with important challenges on the international stage. And I was very proud of that moment. I wasn't political in 2003. I was still just an analyst of international relations. And the way that he balanced the interests of the Canadian population in making that decision, you know, drove me even closer to moving towards an appreciation of the Liberal Party at the international stage.
Great. That explains the Liberal Party. Other than the fact that you live here, what was the reason for the riding?
Well, I work in the riding. I spend my summers in the riding. My in-laws have a place in Irish Cliff, and we spend most of our summers in the riding. Look, you know, I've been candidate since 2007. I've driven around this riding. I've put probably about 60,000 kilometers on my car over the last 5 or 6 years, learning about the riding. I've met most of the mayors, you know, agricultural producers, leaders of industry, community organizations. It's a great riding. And as most of my friends say, I have probably the prettiest riding in the province.
What are some of the issues that you feel that are very special to our riding?
Well, we have to balance urban issues with rural issues, because the riding is evenly split population-wise almost between the urban sectors of Sherbrooke, so Rock Forest, Saint-Élie, Deauville, Ascot, Mont-Bellevue, with the rural areas, you know, Quaticook, Cookshire, down to Irish Cliff, North Attlee, and to balance those two is kind of tough. So what I'm looking at from especially a rural perspective this year, I was lucky enough to have Michael Ignatieff here last week, and he launched our rural platform, Rural Canada Matters. And in that platform, we've got all sorts of great stuff to help rural communities stay vital. Things like tax credits for volunteer firefighters. We've got an indemnity for firefighters and policemen that get killed on the job. I think that's pretty important as a sign of respect for those folks who sacrifice themselves for our communities. We've got a new national food policy. First time in Canadian history that we want to put forward a national food policy, one that will, you know, allow farmers to get their food onto our plates. You know, I hear people always talking about, oh, I hate the fact that we have to buy, you know, snow peas from China. Well, what we're going to try to do over the first couple of years of a Liberal government mandate is make sure that we don't have to rely on importing so much food from abroad. Try to get as many products from Canadian producers onto our plates.
Is that kind of a community local initiative?
Well, I think that the jewel of that that platform is what we call the Farmers Market Initiative. And what we're going to have in there is a fund where we can help communities set up farmers markets. You know, I spend most of my summers in Ayers Cliff going to the farmers market on the weekend to buy, you know, fresh fruits, fresh veggies, cheeses, baked goods. And I think if more Canadians have the opportunity to get access to farmers markets where local producers can show off their wares and incite folks to eat local, then I think folks will do that. They will eat local.
Well, that brings us to the question of just how much impact can someone in federal government have on the local municipality. For instance, I know that here in this region, farmer markets are becoming quite rare because of so much municipal over government. They tend to want to make everything very complicated, very difficult for the farmer to go out and be able to sell his produce to the people in the region where he lives. I find that ridiculous.
Well, what it would take is provincial and federal politicians to sit down with municipalities and find out what's up, in the sense that, you know, what I want to do is to get folks to eat local produce. Mm-hmm. If you know, I have to sit down and you know, try to get mayors to be more open to that, I'll sit down and chat with them about that. You know, I can't overrule municipal regulations.
No, but I think the question comes down to just how do people really get into this locally? If we're going to vote, I mean, voting on a national level is fine and good, but I'd like to have the option of voting locally for a local person who stands up for local things.
Yep.
That means that there would have to be some chance, there would be some kind of actual action that follows that. And if not, why are we going through the process?
Well, the reason why I'm happy about running in this campaign is that I've followed the local MP over the last 3 years, and I've seen what she does. And what she does is she gets out and meets folk in different events organized in communities. But it stops right about there. You know, she does a good job giving out passports, but that's not the job of an MP. An MP is supposed to be there to serve their population, to engage their population, to go into the community, find out what's up, see what they can do to help. I think we're getting a little disenchanted with the system because for the last 7 years, that's what we've been living through, is an MP who doesn't engage with her population. You know, a lot of folks in this area know who I am, or they've seen me in the paper, or we've met at different events. They know that I am keen to help. You talk to the UPA, you talk to the Chamber of Commerce in Quaticook, Quetiacook. You know, these are folks that I've engaged with over the last 3 years, and I will promise to be on the ground. You know, in my first couple of years of a mandate, I'll make sure that that's what my key job is. Stay in the riding, meet mm-hmm. the folks, even get to know them better than I already know them now.
Yeah, I guess it comes down to the perception of the people is, will a local vote count in the end? And what you're telling me is that you feel that it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, it does for sure. You know, a lot of folk think that Ottawa is far away. What happens in Ottawa doesn't have an impact on their lives. Just going through my platform or just going through what we've launched over the last 2 or 3 years as a party, I see all sorts of ways that we can affect the everyday lives of people. You know, one of the key things I've noticed so far during this campaign is half the time I don't have cellular service. Okay, you know, the far eastern reaches of the riding, there's no cellular service. That's important for things like economic development in those towns and villages. For us, in our platform, we've got an engagement. Within 3 years of coming to power, we'll make sure that we have basic cellular coverage in 100% of the territory.
Well, talking about communications, we'll get into a subject that is my pet thing. This is a community radio station, a locally produced independent broadcaster, mm-hmm. of which there are approximately 145 across Canada, mm-hmm. 34 of them in Quebec. Those community radio stations are independent broadcasters as opposed to networks which traditionally, and while not traditionally, but they do profit individuals, the shareholders, the owner of the network. Community radio is owned by the community. You can't get much more direct than that.
Yep.
The fact that we're here talking into our microphones helps to show that community radio is an important part of the Canadian fabric, and also a even more important part of the community here in the townships, given that the population, the Anglophone population, is reduced. This is an Anglophone communication device. Yep. It's a tool that allows our community to be seen, to be visible. If we're not there, then we may as well not exist because we're invisible.
Yep.
So no one's going to make policy to cater to an invisible community. Having said that, mm-hmm. if you found an issue as a politician, I would imagine this would get me going if I was a politician. If I could find an issue that would help my communities, that would help the fabric of Canada, the Canadian identity, and would cost the taxpayers nothing to support, I'd jump all over that.
For sure.
All right, well, that's what community radio is.
Yep.
And I'll just take a second to say that community radio is not funded, and the federal government has never undertaken to even take ads with us.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a little difficult for us to be able to fathom such a great community concern when even local advertising is not sent the way of community radio. It's sent to commercial broadcasters, which profit an individual.
Mm-hmm.
What about that?
Well, one of the things that I've been working on over the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, and even a bit longer than that, is I've been involved with the Anglophone community in the region here. I was on the Townshippers board for a couple of years before I got too political. I've worked with regional Anglophone organizations. I've consulted with them, and I understand CGMQ is a key part of the community here. Now, I can't make any overt promises with regards to funding for community radio, but it would be interesting for an MP to sit in your riding who knows you're here, who knows that you have...
An excellent point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows that CGMQ is an integral part of the Anglophone community. You know, I've seen, and this is one of my worries about, you know, CBC is the national broadcaster, and they don't cover townships issues very well anymore. That's all been caused by funding cutbacks to CBC. So you guys are picking up where mm-hmm. CBC has been basically, I think, shirking a bit of their responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
On one part, yes, CBC does matter a lot, and I recognize the importance of mm-hmm. CBC as a national broadcaster, but you guys serve a key important role for the community where it can't fill in.
No, and the thing is that we don't disappear. If tough times come along,
yeah.
we're still here.
Yeah.
You know, we always will be here because we're owned by the community that mm-hmm. we represent. That's something that even the opposition members that you're opposing right now have come in and been interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
Not so far this campaign, but last campaign we interviewed them all.
Yep.
And that means to me that our listeners have a right to hear what you're saying.
For sure.
So someone who's a listener of community radio, supports our community, thinking locally, has just as much of a right to know about federal campaigns, federal initiatives, as do the listeners of a commercial station. And even more so, probably, because they're helping to support local things. So that's why I'm saying that when we talk about funding for community radio, I'm not exactly keen of that term, because we're really talking about fair play. If the federal government was to undertake to take 25% of their advertising campaigns with community radio across Canada, there would be no funding problems at all. We're just asking for a chance to do our job.
Well, it's something that I would be very much open to, you know, if elected, in the sense that, you know, I would take something like the H1N1 crisis last year. You know, I don't know how much money in the way of advertising you guys got with regards to public service announcements about injection sites and stuff like that. I mean, what did you guys get during that period? Did you get anything?
We got one advertisement, which ran, I think, for 3 weeks.
Okay.
And that was it. Meanwhile,
from the provincial or the federal level?
Federal.
Okay.
Yeah, provincial government has undertaken to 4% of their advertising budgets go to community radio.
Okay.
They've put that in writing.
Yeah.
I would like to see the federal government ante up to more than that, because that even at 4%, that means 96% of federal taxpayer dollars go into private industry, while only a scant 4% goes to providing local information.
Well, listen, you know, again, I can't speak for the overall budget outlay that we've talked about in the platform so far, but I don't see your request as being unreasonable. And I would say that if I were to be sitting in this riding after this election, that's something that I would make sure is taken into concern in Ottawa. And you're right in saying that 4% might be a good start, but I think we should go farther than that, maybe.
Yes, I think so, because of the 145 community radio stations across Canada, if the figures that I read for national advertising from the federal government are correct, certainly 25% would go a long ways to funding us and making sure that we're able to continue what we do.
Especially with a conservative government that spends $27 million a month on advertising.
Well, yeah, that's just
and since you don't get much of that, you probably don't get any of that.
No, and virtually all of it goes into private pockets.
Yep.
So I find that a little strange.
Yep.
Maybe even not Canadian ownership. Who knows? I'm not certain
some
about the ownership structure.
Yeah, and you're right in the sense that some of it isn't Canadian ownership.
Yeah. So. Getting back to local voting, people who are interested in voting in the federal government want to get interested again, like perhaps we were 20, 30 years ago. People are feeling a real lack of connection. That's what I'm hearing everywhere we go and everyone we talk to. There's a lack of connection with especially federal government, and even more so local federal representation. So how is that countered?
You got to be on the ground. You know, you've got, as an MP, you've got to be in the communities. You've got to be meeting folks. You got to be engaging. You got to be going towards people. You can't be sitting in your office waiting for folks to call you. You know, that's what she does. She waits for people to call her before she'll do something. That I can't stand that. That's not proactive. I think a local MP has got to be proactive. He's got to go towards the people that live in his riding. You've got to be there to make sure that that you know, an issue, a problem that's just starting, is heard before it becomes a major problem. And you know, I teach a lot of things about crisis management and international conflict. Well, in international conflict, the best way to deal with an issue is to stop it before it explodes into a major crisis. So the only way an MP can do that is by being on the ground, talking with people, learning about what they do, how well they're doing, what goes well, what doesn't work well. And only by doing that can I then go to Ottawa and say, look, you know, talk to a minister or talk to a colleague and say, look, what's the situation you're riding? Maybe we should sit down and start looking at ways of improving the situation. That's my intention at the outset. I intend on doing that.
Okay, so I was listening to the leaders' debate.
Yep.
And I, from my perspective, saw three leaders who were addressing almost everything to the Conservative Party.
Yep.
Does that mean that everyone just takes for granted that that's where the power will be, and that's where it has to be contested, that that the only target is the conservative Harper government?
To a certain extent, yes, and to a certain extent, no. I was listening to the debate last night, too. Stephen Harper is in power now, okay? He has done things that are not good for the country. He's going to do things that are not good for the country, like the F-35 purchase or the policies towards these mega prisons. And last night, what we had to do was to tell Canadians why Stephen Harper should not be prime minister. And so that's one of the main things was how can we tell Canadians that Stephen Harper should not be there? And on the other side, all the leaders, of course, had to put forward what they're going to offer too. And to a certain extent, you know, Michael Ignatieff did that. He talked about our rural food policy, our national food plan. He talked about early childhood learning. He talked about rural doctors. He talked about home care. But you're also looking at a debate where you've got 2 or 3 minutes per issue for 4 leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really say a lot. So what folks have to do, one, is that they have to get in touch with their local candidates if they want to really know what's going on. They have to come out to local debates. And I just want to put in a plug that tomorrow night, or I guess, is this being played tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
In North Hatley. The first of our series of all candidates debates is going to take place at 7:30 in the Universalist United, Unitarian Church on Main Street in North Hatley. And come out, listen to the issues, because we're going to be talking about issues.
Well, CGMQ will be there.
Yes, of course.
We're recording live. It yep. for a rebroadcast afterwards.
Great.
So the things that came out in the leaders' debate weren't in any depth. I agree with you. It should have been much more depth about many more issues. It's some very disturbing things that have been said about the Conservative government, about the Harper government, not the least of which is lack of respect for the democratic process. Now, I've heard other people come back and say, well, yeah, fine and good, but the Liberal Party didn't do that much better when they were in power. What do you say to that?
At some point, people have to make a choice about the renewal of political parties. You know, Michael Ignatieff is what I see as renewal. I see myself as renewal. We've got candidates across Quebec and across Canada that are renewing this party, taking us back to some of our more democratic roots that we had earlier on. You know, one of the big problems with the Harper government is that they control everything. They shut down Parliament when they're not happy. They throw people out of events if they don't like their political colors. And that's not, for me, what policy is. Politics is. It's about letting everybody in, letting everybody have a voice, and making sure that everybody is heard. And then making good, solid policy that talks to as many people as possible.
So you think there's been a reform in the Liberal government?
Inside the Liberal Party, yes. Well, we aren't a Liberal government yet.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Now, you know, my only promise I can make on that is, you know, if I get elected, when I go to Ottawa, there's no way in HELL that I would want to come back to this riding and have people look at me and say, you're just like the rest of them. Okay. That's the one thing I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I can see that.
Yeah. And to not be able to come back to the riding, come back to Compton Stanstead and look people in the eye and have them have no respect for what I'm doing in Ottawa, that would be shameful. And an MP that can't come back to his or her riding and be proud of what they did and have people be proud of what they did, you know, they don't deserve to sit.
Well, I must tell you, it's refreshing to speak to someone who is so enthusiastic still about the democratic process, the political setup that we have here in Canada, and also, as all I'm gleaning, tristesse, the sadness over seeing part of the Canadian identity, which is peacekeeping role, disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, what was interesting about, you know, Lester Pearson and peacekeeping and the Suez Crisis and then into Cyprus and then during the Cold War was that the way the world functioned was that you had two big blocks of countries facing off against each other. Yeah, the Soviets, you had the American bloc. We were part of the American bloc. And peacekeeping was a way of making sure that those two blocs didn't go to war with each other. Okay, and back in the day, you only had what we called interstate wars, wars between states. Okay, very little civil conflict where the UN would intervene. Today, things are different. What we've got today are internal crises within states, populations rising up against those states that don't respect their interests, that don't protect their interests. So, you know, to say that peacekeeping is the only thing we can do might be problematic, because in a case like, let's say, Libya, well, there's no peace to keep. And the Canadian population has to ask the question, do we sit back and watch as the Gaddafi regime destroys the pro-democracy regime or the pro-democracy movement? Or do we try to give them a hand in achieving what they're going after?
So this is a real-time kind of example of what you would espouse, and so would you think that the role that Canada is playing right now, having fighter jets over Libyan soil, is a good one? Or
well, listen, I think the decision to intervene on the part of NATO might have been taken a bit quickly, but you've got human lives in the equation here. You've got a regime that has refused to listen to international pressure. Look, the UN passed this mandate. Okay, the UN said that we have to intervene. NATO has undertaken that role, but we've also got to make sure that you know, if and when there's regime change in Libya, that we make sure that we're there, we respect the population, we don't want boots on the ground. We don't want something where we could turn this into another Afghanistan in the 1980s.
So you'd be supportive so far of the role, other than the speed with which it happened?
To a certain extent, yes, I would be.
Would you be in favor of expanding that role? I know you said no troops involved, but there's a lot of other options. It seems
it's like what we're going to be doing in Afghanistan after the end of the combat mission this summer. Afghans need security. If they don't have security, they won't survive as a state. They'll return into a failed state status. Failed state status is what got us Al-Qaeda, which is what got us the Taliban. So what we're going to be doing in Afghanistan after this summer is staying on and training Afghan security troops to make sure that they can maintain security in their country. Something like that in the future. Canada's got a great experience in forming police units. Our RCMP goes around the world and helps countries form their police officers. Our Canadian forces have a great reputation in forming other military forces. You know, we have exchange officers in Canada all the time learning about how our troops function. I have a great respect for what they do. But, you know, in the case of Afghanistan, we've done our part with regards to the combat mission, but we can't drop and run. Okay, we've got to stay on and make sure that the security infrastructure on the ground is manageable.
So going back to Libya, the point now is that even with everything that's happening, NATO initiatives included, Mr. Gaddafi is still entrenched where he was and has not moved, and people are still dying and suffering. Obviously, the efforts that have gone on haven't been either enough or effective or haven't been taken seriously. So that's where it becomes a kind of a sticky wicket, because if that's left to go on, what's the point of doing anything at all if people are still dying and suffering? And then you say to yourself, well, if that's not working, maybe we should take our involvement further. And that's where it gets kind of dangerous.
You got to leave it to the folks on the ground to make sure that that internal populations take care of internal concerns.
That's kind of difficult given the situation of Misrata, for instance, where this has been over a month now that these people have been besieged.
I fully understand, but the question is, You know, the UN has not expanded its mandate yet. It's highly unlikely that the UN would allow for a mandate to be expanded, given that, you know, we're talking about very sensitive issues with regards to Western intervention in the Middle East. And, you know, like in the Kosovo case, like in the Yugoslav case, it was shown that, you know, airstrikes can have an impact. It's not going to be automatic. You know, we've only been intervening now for a little over a month. Kosovo took a lot longer than that. The Yugoslav case took even longer than that.
Over a year.
Yeah. So you know, we can't expect a democratic revolution to take form or succeed within, you know, a couple of weeks.
So this is degenerated to world politics and world involvement, and really your strength, and I think I can speak for a lot of people who know you, that is local initiatives.
Yeah.
What is the one thing that you would love to have for your region that you would go to Ottawa and fight for, that you really want?
Well, there's so many things that people have told me that they need. There's not one thing I could identify. If I could identify one thing, it's maintaining our rural populations. You know, when I came into active politics, one of the first things I did was I pulled out the census data on our riding. Okay, very comprehensive, well done census data from the mandatory long form census, which the Conservatives got rid of. Which allowed us to see that most of our rural communities are in a population decline. Okay? Over the past, 10, 12 years, we're seeing gradual decline in the populations of our regions. I don't like that. You know, we need people to be in our rural communities. We need people working on the farms. We need people building small and medium-sized enterprises outside of major cities. If not, then we're going to lose our regions. They're going to disappear. Everybody's going to be moving into the cities. We can't keep our kids on the farm. We can't keep our kids in our villages. And it's going to be a major crisis in the future.
Well, isn't that because local rural initiatives, local farmers, were turned into big business? And if you weren't part of the big business, you just couldn't continue farming?
Well,
and isn't that part to do with the legislation from the Liberal government?
No, not in our region. Here, the major aspect of farming that we've got to look at is dairy farming.
Yeah, dairy farming has been legislated out of local family capabilities, usually.
Oh, no, not at all. Look, with the supply management system, local farmers are able to keep a pretty good lifestyle going. You've been able to see, I mean, they still need help. Supply management isn't enough, but supply management is a good place to start from. In the sense that our dairy sector can create revenue, can create a pretty good lifestyle, but we've also got to facilitate, let's say, intergenerational transfers. We've got to be able to give the children of producers the capacity to buy the quota from their parents. We've got to give the opportunity for dairy producers to, you know, expand into new international markets. And in that sense, I think we're starting off with some pretty good basic materials, but our national food plan says we've got to do more. We've got to be able to make sure that, and just not dairy, but, into pork, mm-hmm. into beef, into vegetables and fruits. The transformation of those goods, you know, the cheese industry and the specialized cheese industry in this area is booming, you know, and we should be profiting from that by making sure that we consume as much as possible.
True. Okay. So in this, all of this, is there something that I haven't covered that you would like to mention?
No, I think one of the things that I've heard a bit on the ground is that folks aren't too sure why we're in an election. The whole process about how the government lost its confidence.
I have my own theory on that, but go ahead.
and what I tell people is, listen, Harper doesn't like our democratic system. Okay? He doesn't like the fact that he has to be responsible to the House of Commons. The House of Commons, the individual MPs who sit in the House of Commons, are the representatives of Canada. And the Prime Minister is responsible to those individuals. If those individuals are going to pass laws and regulations and bills, they need information. They need all possible information. And for years now, Harper has been hiding information. He's been falsifying information. And the Speaker of the House made the choice to find him in contempt of the Canadian people.
First time in Canadian history.
First time in Canadian history. And what are MPs supposed to do? You've got a contemptuous Prime Minister who disregards the will of the Canadian people. Do you leave him in power? No. And, you know, I was listening to Harper last night and going on a bit, oh, this is, you know, it's just a difference of opinion and we don't agree with the choice of the Speaker of the House. Speaker of the House is like a judge in a courtroom.
Well, that doesn't make it a matter of opinion now, does it?
No, it doesn't. He passed judgment. Yeah. And then the House subsequently passed judgment.
Once you're found in contempt, you're found in contempt. It's not a matter of opinion. It's not
exactly. You know, if a judge in a courtroom decides that you are guilty of something,
that's his opinion.
It's not a difference of opinion. You are guilty.
I'd like to say that when I get a traffic ticket. It's just a matter of opinion.
Exactly. You know, and that's what happened in the House of Commons. He was found guilty of contempt, and I find that a very justifiable reason to be in an election.
Well, I've heard a lot of people say the argument that they're not really tricked by the maneuvering that happened, and that the election timing has more to do with his perceived chances of achieving the majority government rather than actions by any other party or parties. And I've heard a lot of that.
Yeah, well, listen, I think he, up until about 2 days ago, public opinion hadn't shifted all that much. But then all of a sudden we find out that the Auditor General had presented a report on the G8 G20 summit that was held in Ontario last year. And in that report, massive irregularities in spending have been found. And those massive irregularities in spending have been, quote unquote, been seen to be almost illegal. Okay, that just reinforces what I've been saying about Harper's hiding information. He's falsifying information. Now he's making, they're making decisions in the riding of Tony Clement without passing through the House of Commons. Okay, they're distributing checks to people to build gazebos without asking permission from the House of Commons. Okay, these were decisions that were made that were not democratic, and as Sheila Fraser had said, quote unquote, look quite illegal.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly illogical, unless you're buying votes or appearing to buy votes, I should say.
Should say is a good thing to do.
Yes. I always should say.
Yes.
Yeah. I try to always keep that. Well, thank you very much, William. I think it's been very informative. We're going to certainly air this a few times and help people to get information on the candidates. The fact that that you're here speaking to us is a good sign that you are interested in local affairs.
Yeah.
I'm right now struggling with what degree I feel a local vote is worthwhile. Certainly sends a message, but I don't know. We'll see what turns out. I certainly wish you the best of luck in your campaign.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much for being here.
And thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.